and welcome to the Three Inning Save podcast. In one of my favorite podcasts that isn't the Three Inning Save podcast, good job, brain. They frequently lead off with a segment because it's a trivia-ish podcast. They lead off with a segment called Actually, which is a corrections segment. And you asked me a trivia question. I got it wrong. I said I said Ian Anderson when the answer was Kyle Wright. But I was way closer than you were giving me credit for.
Yes. In fact, so you got it wrong and then I got it wrong because you said Ian Anderson and I launched into a 17 minute run on Ian Thomas, who I know who Ian Anderson is. I know who you were talking about. And yet, my brain went Ian Thomas and talked about it. Someone tweeted at us, and I looked and was like, oh yeah, I did completely mess that up. It's one of those in the moment you don't even realize. But I will say, I'm glad I brought him up because he did really look like Clayton Kershaw. I mean, in a way, he could be in the Hyunjin Ryu ramen commercial stand-in for Kershaw kind of way, But yeah, that was
whereas Ian Anderson is one of the three or four Braves that year that looked like Charlie Culberson.
Right.
To clarify, Ian Anderson started a game two as Kyle Wright started a game three. So I mixed up by one game. So I got the question right as far as I'm
we go, the point is we go on tangents and now we have some time to go on tangents.
If you're wondering why we haven't been talking about the Dodgers, it's because they stunk and it's not fun to talk about, but we're gonna do it anyways. We're a little long, so we'll do that now. We'll take a break now and then we'll talk about a pretty wretched game three.
Everybody Googles everything, especially potential customers or employers, and a business or personal online reputation can make or break you. If negative search results or reviews are impacting you, WebMax is here to help. Our proven process restores your online reputation quickly and effectively, and it matters. Don't let negative results control your narrative. Visit GoWebMax.com and fill out a brief confidential form to see how we can help. Remember, if you aren't paying attention to your online reputation, someone else is. GoWebMax.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So you and I were talking right before we went on that this is the least Dave Roberts scene. Certainly some people are blaming Dave Roberts because we've talked about this ad nauseum. Easy to blame the manager than the player because you can be the manager. You can making the decisions. And I get that maybe Lance Lynn should have come out a home run or two earlier. But at the same time, you were starting Lance Lynn in game three. That you were going to get you had to have expected three of them, right? So the four, or five, I guess, if depending on how you want to count a foul ball home run.
On a text chain with family, in the couple weeks, leading up to the postseason, my whole thing was about Lance Lynn. I said, you let him go until he gets to six or whatever innings, or when he gives up the third home run, you pull him. And that was sort of my sort of jokey guideline. But you also don't expect things just happen so fast in the series, even when they didn't, like, so the fateful ending in Game 3 was the third, and here, this is just a sad statement, like, Game 3 was their best game because they had two innings where they weren't trailing.
Hey! Like,
that's how badly the Dodgers were beaten in this series. And it's weird to say that because the last two games were 4-2, but they felt like a billion to nothing. Like,
oh, it just, absolutely.
Like, yeah, like, we'll end on another sort of sad thing to the, or at least in this segment, but like, yeah, they're just not, like, almost literally nothing went right. Like, you know, nothing going according to plan, but you're right. Like, the, you know, it's easy to, you can ignore most of the Dave Roberts stuff. I will say the only thing that, like, because I thought after 2019, that was such an egregious, like, loss. Like, where you're like, you could see, like, had ownership just decide, like, you know what? Like, we got to do something, right? Yeah. Because at that point, they hadn't won it. They obviously had the two pennants, right? So it would have been a rash decision, but, like, you could see why someone would make that decision at that time. Now it's like, okay, like, it's hard to see. But it's also the thing where if you want to shake something up, you can't, like the old statement, you can't fire 25, or I guess it's 26 now, you can't fire 26 players, right? You can change the manager or whatever, or the hitting coach, or, you know, something like that. But, like, this front office does not strike me as a rash decision maker. I mean, maybe, you know, also, sometimes fans are just angry, right? Like, they just want to see something different. And it feels like this is their thing now, like, which is, like, weird. Like, I don't know. It's just a bad thing. But like you mentioned, so Lance Lynn, right, gave up the four home runs in a six-batter stretch. It got to, like, a comical stage near the end of that run. Now, Dave Roberts was asked, you talked about the Roberts thing, like, he had Caleb Ferguson warming, and I think, I forgot who he said, I think he wanted to go to him for Alec Thomas, who was the lefty at hitting seventh or eighth. And like, he was just, you know, I don't, like, after the two home runs, like, he just, like, didn't expect Lynn to give up two more.
Yeah.
Like, and, but the funny part is, I think it was the last two were back to back. And Gabriel Moreno was the fourth. So he's up. They kept Lynn in for him. He hits a fly ball down the right field line that was called a home run initially. He ran to the bases, if I'm not mistaken. But then it was reviewed, and it was foul. And it was, by review, clearly foul. Like, at the time, it could have been a home run, whatever. And then, but, like, immediately, next pitch, hit it a billion feet to left center. Like, just, I mean, yeah, you just have to laugh at that point, right? Yeah. So here's the other sad part. So Lynn then is pulled, right? The Dodgers are down 4-0. He went 2 2/3 innings, which makes him the horse of this staff in the series. Like, 14 outs, 13 runs for the Dodgers starters this series.
Jeez.
You just can't compete. Ryan Pepiot, I said this, like, ahead of time. Like, but I thought,
you know what's funny is if the offense was at all like the regular season, they would have been up two games.
Right. You're right. You could see that, like, yeah, exactly. Like, game one, they weren't going to win. Like,
yeah, correct. Yeah, right. I know what you mean. I had no hopes there.
But, like, so Ryan Pepiot didn't pitch at all. I guess the other sort of thing, if you're sort of nitpicking with, like, Roberts, right, is that he said he's going to manage with urgency, like, in game two. He's going to manage, like, it's game seven. Then he's going to manage game three like it's game seven. He didn't manage game three like it's game seven, but also they didn't give up a run after Lynn, right? So, like, it kind of worked. He mentioned in the in-game interview with Lawrence Jahadi, it did not come up post-game that I saw, but he said he was also thinking ahead to games four and five as to why, like, I guess Pepiot wasn't in at that point. I forgot when. I don't remember if they did in the third or the fourth. It was probably the fourth. So I would imagine that's the other interesting thing, because obviously they were insistent that Kershaw starting game four. And you wonder how quick of a hook he would have had. But I think it was clear that Ryan Pepiot was going to figure prominently into that game. But again, they didn't get to that game. So, like, it's all moot. The other thing was, in that group, like, Gratterall and Phillips went late. Vesia was in between. But Michael Grove had, like, the sort of the pivotal thing that where it could have gotten way out of hand. Like, in the fifth, he came in. Ferguson did relieve Lynn, and then he walked someone in the fifth. He was still in at that point. And then Grove got two outs, but also walked two to load the bases. But then he just let him pitch out of it. Like, and he fell behind 3-1, could have walked in another run, but he got a ground out to end it. So, like, didn't give up a run. So, like, the bullpen, you know, they did his job. It's fine. The Dodgers did rally in the seventh. They got four straight singles. For two runs, they got to within 4-2, the same score of game two. Then when the Diamondbacks went to the left-hander Andrew Salfrank with two on and two outs, they only had one right-handed batter left on the bench. Kiki Hernandez started game three over James Outman in center. That was the one sort of lineup. They also moved JD Martinez to third, Will Smith fifth. Chris Taylor pinch hit earlier in the game for Jason Hayward and stayed in. Wait, did he pinch hit for Peralta? I think he was Peralta. Whatever. Yeah, it was one of those two. But Kike and Taylor had the two RBI singles in the seventh. So, like, but no Ahmed Rosario on the roster, as we, you know, mentioned before. The Dodgers went to Austin Barnes, who grounded out on the first pitch. So, end of that threat, right? And I think that's sort of the spot that Rosario was basically for, right? Like, so I guess you can look at it in that respect now. Who knows how things could have gone? The Diamondbacks weren't ever going to start a left-handed starter. They don't have one. So, like, you're basically, you used Colton Wong in the right spot to use Colton Wong in that he pinch hit for Miguel Rojas in game two in a spot where he's a better offensive choice to potentially, you know, get a big number or get a big inning or whatever. So, but what you gain there, you also lose defensively. So what you could have gained there, was that worth not having Rosario over Barnes in game three, right? That's the calculation when they're making the roster. But again, the front office sets the roster. Like, you know, that's the other thing. Like, it's obviously there's collaboration and all that kind of stuff, but like, That's where it comes down to it. And that's one of those problems, like they always say, like, it's like a 55-45 decision or something like that, where it's could go kind of either way. They just sort of opted one way, and it just didn't work out, right? Like, they just ran out. But I think the bigger thing, obviously, I didn't even put it in the notes because we sort of talked about it last game, but Mookie Betts, his first hitless postseason series of his career, he's 0-11. Freeman was 1-10, and the hit was an infield single. They didn't do anything. Will Smith, in the ninth, he singled. He had three hits in game three. He had five hits in the series. He tripled in game two and doubled in game three. No, tripled in game one, excuse me, doubled in game three. He had two of the Dodgers' four extra base hits in the series. Again, sad. But it was also a silver lining because Smith hadn't really hit in, like, the last two-plus months of the season. So, like, that was at least good to see. Chris Taylor followed Smith with a drive that was, I believe it was 407 feet off the bat to dead center, deepest part of the ballpark, right into the glove of Alec Thomas just ahead of the wall. Yeah. Baseball Savant, of course, says it would have been a home run in 22 of 30 parks, but the Dodgers weren't playing in one of those 22, so that's a sort of a key thing there. But, like, here's the other sad part I was getting to. The fact that an almost tie is, like, what we're clinging to as hope for maybe, the Dodgers' best chance at offense underscores how bad they were, right? They scored six total runs, two runs each game. They scored in five of 27 innings in the entire series. So, or no, excuse me. Wait, yeah, four of 27 innings. It's even worse. Yeah, it was a bad series, Jacob. I don't know if you... Don't know if you remember this.
Yeah. I hopefully won't remember it much longer.
So, but we can remember something here in a second. For the series, the Dodgers did hit 177, 248, 250. Their 498 OPS was their fourth lowest for a single postseason series. Can you name any of the three putrid Dodgers offensive playoff
series? This is all time.
Their worst. Yes.
I will I'll give it a shot. I can at least make up years, and then you'll tell that's me right. I didn't make the playoffs that year, and I'll be embarrassed. But that's you know what? Being embarrassed is just par for the course right now, so we'll go with that.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Name any of the three worst OPS by a Dodgers team in a playoff series.
Yeah.
So the first one that came to mind, the first thing that came to mind was, and this is not a guess, so don't say anything, is the 2019 NLDS, but that's just because of how bad AJ Pollock was. That really sticks up. And I thought you were asking about a player.
A single. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So as a team.
He was so bad. And but what a turnaround later. But yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. That was incredibly bad. Yeah.
The first year that came to mind series was the 2015 NLDS against the Mets.
So I don't think that was that bad because I also think the Dodgers had a good game in there.
I seem to recall that was the playoff series where Molly Knight kept tweeting a lot of holes in this lineup.
So
and it was like Justin Turner and that was it.
So 626 OPS that series. They did score 18 runs in 5 games, but they did have it's propped up a little bit because the blowout Mets win in game 3, it was 13-7. So like the Dodgers scored. I believe someone did something late in that game. Who knows? I'm not looking it up. I think it was Howie Kendrick maybe hit like a late home run or something. But that was not one of them. I will say my hint to you right now is they lost all of these series. So I can tell you my other sort of fun fact about this. I have when you search on Baseball Reference, unless there's another way to do it, you have to go series by series. So I searched for their team totals in every division series. Then I searched for team totals in every LCS, then every World Series. So their worst NLCS ever, OPS wise, was 579 in 1988 when they won in 7 games. So Like
which by the way, 88 in LCS was going to be one of my guesses.
Yeah, but so. Yeah, that's why I wanted to get that out there ahead of time. So.
Jeez.
Yeah, I'll give you one more hint. You want another hint?
I'm going to take one more guess, and then I'll take a hint. How about that?
Yeah, yeah.
2004 NLDS versus the Cardinals.
That's a good one too, because they were sort of obviously Lima time had the shutout.
Yep.
They actually scored 12 runs in that one. So in four games, 699 OPS. Okay. It wasn't the best. They had some power. Sean Green hit three solos. That was basically their most.
I'll
of their
never
power,
forgive so. You, Sean Green, ruining ruining my shot at trivia.
Oh, so I'll give you a hint. There's one NLDS and two World Series.
Okay. Is the NLDS in the aughts?
No.
Okay, I'm not gonna bother with that. Is the World Series? They still kind of, is it 2018?
No.
Okay. Then I'm tapping out. I've put my guesses in. Anything else would literally be the Dodgers were in the playoffs that year. So
my other hint was going to be the in the World Series one each in LA and Brooklyn.
Okay.
Dodgers in the 2018. They weren't good in 2018 World Series either. 550 OPS. Okay. 16 runs in five games.
Yeah.
Okay, so the I'll go third to first. 1920 World Series against Cleveland.
These are one of the things where I just really wish I had just like thrown that out there. Just
Zach Wheat, man. You gotta think about it.
Well, exactly. Zach Wheat. How they could never. Oh, yeah. He should blip them up to the 800s by himself.
They had a 477 OPS in that series. So it was best of nine that year. They lost in seven. I have to look. I think I had it open earlier. Hold on. I think it was. I want to make sure I get this right because it was a very sad ending to it. Yeah, so Brooklyn was up 2-1, and then they scored 1-1-0-0 and lost the last four. They scored 8 runs in 7 games in the series. That's like their worst.
Have you seen this poster that's on the Wikipedia page for it? I gotta send this. Gotta make the show notes.
Okay. Then the second worst OPS was another division series. 1996 against the Braves. Similar. So home field advantage back then was weird in that it meant the road team was – or the worst team was home first for two games, and then the best team was home for three games. So the Braves, that was like, the peak Braves was they won the first two games at Dodger Stadium just like Arizona did. And then they shut the Dodgers down in game three in Atlanta. So the 96 NLDS, they scored 5 runs in that series with a 425 OPS. So 5 runs is the fewest in the Dodgers for an NLDS. But the worst of all time is the 1966 Dodgers in the World Series. 417. They got swept by the Orioles. It was their third pennant in 4 years, the Dodgers. They scored 2 runs in the first 3 innings of game 1, and then they did not score the rest of the series. 33 innings in a row without a run. They scored 2 runs in 4 games. So you're not going to win that many series, and I have not pulled up this. I want to give you my live reaction. Oh, man, that's a classic. Wilbert Robinson.
The Man O' War of the 1920 baseball season. And also interesting year, I'll have to I want to research a little bit because they were still the Robins, but they were but they were also the Dodgers. So it was the sort of the transitional time. Zach Wheat had a 765 OPS. So
I'm telling you, man, imagine how bad they would be without Zach Wheat.
Ivy Olson had a 753, and it was all pretty bad after that.
God, was it already? Man, it was already 3 years ago now. I did a week-by-week look back at the 1920 team in 2020. Now, again, in fairness, I started that because there was more time at the start of the season because there was no baseball going on. And I was trying to figure out stuff to do. But that was a trip going back through. Well, A, it's harder to get, you know, there's fewer, like, newspaper things and stuff. But there's definitely interesting stuff. There was in that World Series, I forget which one of the Dodgers pitchers, but he got arrested for scalping tickets. It was like a big controversy. And then to the point where, like, I believe Charles Ebbets, like, swore that he'd never pitch for the Dodgers again, and he, like, was traded in the offseason. It was hilarious. I forgot who it was. I will find that and look, try to include it. But, yeah. Yeah, that's where we're
at. All right. So, I guess we look forward. Ugh, it's too early to be looking forward. This is definitely – but this is way – I don't want to say enjoyable because it's not enjoyable. It's less painful, let me put it that way, than, say, last year with a bunch of close games. And they had 1-1, and they're like, ooh, we're close. And, you know,
is it because those games could have gone either way? Is that what it is? Like, because it seems like this series was just like, it just didn't.
Oh, they're just bad, right? There, right? And I think, like, also last year they did win 111 games. Like, they were just like, and they had, it felt like they had everything you needed, right? The starting pitching was good. The bullpen was good. The offense, like,
This year, I mean, we were talking like wasn't sure how they won 100 games, right? Yeah. Like, you know, and also they were very clearly, like, we talked about, well, our pitching roster isn't going to be conventional. We're going to have big boy stuff, and they didn't have the big boy stuff. But like, man, it just went about as bad as you could possibly, like, imagine. Like, but yeah, I agree with you in that it's definitely different. But I was trying to just figure out why, and I think it really is just because they were just so thoroughly beaten.
Yes,
like, and like. So you're just
every,
like,
game,
oh, okay,
kind of got to the point where, like, oh, okay, this is just, you just gotta have to laugh at this point. And like you said, even though technically the games were close, and they never felt close. So you never had that, like, real gripping, like the bullpen meltdown from last year in the Padres. That was, you know, the Dodgers had a lead. It was going to be great. And then it went away.
Yeah.
All right. What other sad news can we talk about?
So we're basically, like, it's not technically the off season, although, I mean, it is in a way, like, just because obviously they don't have games.
It's not a transactional, like, off season yet.
But so I think chief among the sort of decisions here is, like, what's next for Clayton Kershaw. And it's very, like, up in the air, right? Like, we don't know. He's still, like, unwilling to, like, say, you know, publicly, like, what's up with the shoulder. Like, he was very sort of cagey about it. I will say, Andy McCullough in The Athletic, who, by the way, has a book about Clayton Kershaw coming out next May, and I predict that will be a fantastic book. He wrote something after the series about Kershaw, and he just noted, like, Kershaw, Clayton and his wife Ellen are going to take, like, you know, a longer time this offseason. If you remember last year, I believe, He agreed to, like, return, like, within, like, 5 days of free agency or something.
Yeah, it was sweet.
and then, like, they didn't finalize it till, like, for about, like, a month. But, like, he was back. This year they're going to take some time. So the way Andy put it in his story, Kershaw is, quote, considering undergoing additional examination on his left shoulder. Bill Plunkett sort of worded it this way in the Orange County Register, quote, another examination of his shoulder, perhaps by a doctor not associated with the team, is likely Kershaw's next step. So, like, I'm sure that's going to factor in hugely whether he pitches again. Plunkett went on to sort of, you know, theorize, or just, you know, plainly state, like, you know, if he has to have, like, a surgery or something that's going to, like, knock him out for, like, most or all of 2024, do you even want to go through the rehab process to do that, to come back in 2025? Right. Like,
right.
I think that, so that's all, like, I'm sure weighed into the calculus. And other than that, like, it's been this, like, Kershaw's mentioned this multiple times, like, the last couple of years, like, he has three options, I guess. Right. Two teams, the Dodgers or the Rangers, if he wants to stay close to home or whatever, or retiring. Like, and he's always said, like, you know, unless if it's, you know, too, he doesn't like being hurt. I think that's a major factor in it. So that would be, that's why I've sort of been leaning. I think that's probably, if I had to bet, I might bet on retirement, but like, you know, you never know. Like, it depends what they find in said examination of his shoulder. And like, who knows? But like, I think it's just going to, it's not going to be a quick decision. So I think we're going to be, you know, maybe that means Christmas. Maybe that means the new year or whatever, like right. Before we figure out. It was weird because during the lockout season, that was a lot of waiting then, but only because like you couldn't, there was nothing after like, what was it? November 30th or whatever that year until March. So that was a lot of like worry, like, is he not coming back? Like what's that? And then like, once the lockout ended, that all happened pretty quickly again there too. But like,
and it should be noted that if it's not retirement, obviously there's a lot of reasons for him to come back to LA, the familiarity, but one of the big ones was constant winning, and the Rangers are still in the playoffs. So
that's right. Yeah.
Now you could say the Dodgers are still really, you know, the perennial, certainly at least in the regular season, baseball team, along with the Braves and I guess the Astros, always contending. So you can still maybe hang your hat on making the playoffs more so than the Rangers, mm-hmm. but it ain't the disparate gap that it was the last few years.
You want to hear the coping response to that is what if the Rangers don't need him now because they have so much pitching?
There we go.
I mean, they don't, but like, you know,
and he's really buddy with Christian, like that would still, sure. Yeah.
No, but like obviously DeGrom's still hurt. Like he's going to miss, I think, is it all of next year? I don't know what his timeline is, but I think because he had another surgery, but like, you know, Scherzer's going to be there. Jordan Montgomery, I believe, is he still there? Is he a free? No, he's a free agent. Yeah. So okay, I'm. You know what? They need him. Never mind. We're back. So Kershaw is one of 12 Dodgers who are going to be free agents the day after the World Series. JD Martinez is the most notable among that list. Among the rest, I guess he is. You know, the only one who could get like a qualifying offer, I believe. Joel Sherman. Oh, the New York Post last couple weeks ago said qualifying offer this year is going to be $20.5 million. I think it was $19.65 last year. So weirdly, like, so when Martinez was a free agent in 2017, he got traded that year, so Arizona couldn't offer him a qualifying offer. Last year, Boston did not offer him a qualifying offer, so he's eligible to receive a qualifying offer if the Dodgers so choose. And he did really well. Now, obviously, he missed a lot of time, but he was so productive in the games he played. Like, he has a chance to cash in. So the other, you know, it's not, I don't want to like discount the rest of the list. Now, obviously, Julio Urias is part of that list too, currently restricted list. Like, again, persona non grata. He would have been a qualifying offer guy, you know, like, but it's like, nope, like he's just gone, right? But, in the rest of this list, like it, while they don't seem like big names, it just shows it looks back at like the, where the Dodgers were at, right? Jason Hayward and David Peralta are free agents. They started all three games of the LDS. Kike Hernandez and Ahmed Rosario are free agents. They were like the two big trade deadline acquisitions. So that's like a kind of a big chunk of their offense, right? Like, That's five guys with Martinez who were regulars, like, or regular to semi-regulars, who are free agents. So that's a big thing. Of the group, Ryan Brazier as well, Shelby Miller out of the bullpen. Max Muncy is the most likely of the six club options to get picked up. He's at $14 million. There's no buyout there, but it seems like they're going to pick up his option, like, it would have to be like, they'd have to show like unreal, like confidence. It'd be like an unprecedented show for them of confidence in like Michael Busch. You know what? We're just going to go with Michael Busch at third. Like, I know they did that with Miguel Vargas at second this year. It didn't work out. But like, just as another option, because even like, let's say, because I don't know how likely it is JD Martinez is going to resign. I would imagine not. Like, you know, cause like, you know, there's a certain designated hitter who might solve. Well, we're going to talk about the pitching in a second. Now, 2024, he won't solve it, but
yeah,
for hitting, a certain free agent might be there. But like, if they don't do that, and like Martinez goes, they're probably better off if Max Muncy is the DH a good amount of time,
yeah,
because they could have better defense, like just generally, like among the other options, it's weird how there's been like different levels of like thinking this option could go one way or the other. Lance Lynn, $18 million, first couple weeks with the Dodgers, you're like, you know, it kind of makes sense, you know, like, and then now it's like, you don't need to pay for all those home runs. But like, Joe Kelly, $9.5 million, again, you know, very good reliever to have. How much do you want to pay for like a security blanket? And it is, you know, one that's not going to like electrocute you or whatever, but like, so Daniel, the other three are like all hurt guys. Daniel Hudson, $6.5 million. I think he was at least close to pitching near the end of the year. Like he might have joined them had the Dodgers advanced, which they clearly were not capable of doing how they played. But he may retire too, like just after going through the knee stuff, like coming back from one knee injury, then hurting his knee three games later, brutal. Alex Reyes was their sort of, hey, maybe this guy will help, but he had a second shoulder operation midseason. Not going to be back till like mid next year. He has a $3 million option. There's like no way that gets picked up. The eternal Blake Treinen option decision happening again. Like, yeah, I don't know the amount of his. It's up to $7 million, but it was a conditional deal depending on how much he pitched. It might be lower than that. But again, he's pitched 5 innings in the majors last year, none of them this year. It's hard to see them like rolling dice. Then again, I mean, well, I guess it depends on the price, right? Like, because they brought Jimmy Nelson back 4 years in a row. The last two, or no, this year was a major league deal, but it was also like very low money. So maybe they do something like that. But like, you know, whatever. I just think all those guys are pretty likely to get declined. So if you subtract the free agents and you assume Muncy's back, but none of the other option guys are, the Dodgers would have 36 players on the 40-man roster to sort of start the offseason. Now, they could do some more trimming near the bottom of the roster. There's 13 players eligible for arbitration. One of them's Wander Suero. He does have an option left, but you could see a scenario where they're like, you know, we don't need like Wander Suero like taking up a spot while we're trying to do stuff during the offseason. They're also going to end up adding like prospects, you know, in November. Maybe, but like, I don't know if it's going to be that many, but like, you need some space for those guys. So like,
there were, I had read some article where it was like, there were a couple names that for sure will get added.
Yeah. They're,
or if not traded, right. If not.
Oh yeah. So we'll talk about this in a second. Well, I'll just say, we're going to talk about the pitching in a second, but two that come to mind are Nick Frasso and Landon Knack.
Yep. Those were the two.
Yeah. And so, they're 2020 draftees. Frasso was drafted by the Blue Jays, but obviously get traded to the Dodgers. But you know, Gavin Stone was a 2020 draftee. Bobby Miller was a 2020 draftee. Kyle Hurt was a 2020 draftee. They're all on the 40-man already. So, like, you could see, like, those happening. And they're going to go into the mix. But, like, another guy who's not ARB eligible, but Tyler Sear, he's in his, like, early 30s. He was on the 60-day IL for the major part of the year. You could see a situation where he doesn't last the offseason on the roster. Who knows? But, like, but this, all that, the other thing, so at the start of the offseason, you know, they're right now the Dodgers, as we speak, have 53 players on their 40-man roster. But that's because they have 12 players on the 60-day injury. So 10 of those are pitchers. Gavin Lux and Jake Mariznick are the other two. So the players don't have to get activated or just removed from the 60-day IL, which takes up a spot, until 5 days after the World Series. So option decisions don't have to happen until 5 days. They have to happen within the 5 days after the World Series. So all that stuff, like, because I didn't realize this until the other day, or like, it could have been a scenario where, because so they have the 53, right? You have 12 free agents day one after the World Series. Now you're down to 41. So I was thinking, oh, they're going to have to cut someone in October, you know, to like prepare for that. But then I didn't realize you don't have to take the 60 guys off until, what's it called? Until 5 days later. So like,
but still, you know, that's
right.
Not a lot of movement.
No, right. Exactly. Yeah. That's why I think those other guys will get, but then you're looking, right? So like Kershaw's a big maybe. Then, you know, obviously Gonsolin's not going to pitch next year. Dustin May is like maybe mid-season. So you cannot count on him for anything. Like anything he gives you, gravy.
Right.
But you can't go into the offseason thinking, well, Dustin May we got at some point. Like, no, he's not a thing until later, right? So here, I was just looking. Like, here's who they have on the 40-man who are starters, right? Walker Buehler, who, again, has not pitched since in a year and a half. The weird thing about Buehler, right, like this whole we talked about this a little bit on the last episode, where basically the last three postseasons the Dodgers just ran out of starting pitching. Some of that is like terrible timing in terms of like in 2021 Kershaw got hurt the last weekend of the regular season, but then like they were as well set up that year, I thought. You have Scherzer and Buehler pitching like aces, Urias right behind them. They all just ran out of gas, like, you know, in the playoffs. And so, and they didn't have anyone behind them. Like, it was just because Kershaw was out. So like, it was a very rough go last year. They're like, well, Gonsolin, he hasn't pitched in 6 weeks, except one little tune-up thing. He'll be fine for the playoffs. And then he was not fine. And then we go through this whole year where their pitching depth was so bad that they knew Tony Gonsolin's UCL was torn, like, you know, a few months before he went out. They said, you can keep pitching and you're not going to do more damage to it. Like, and then he just thought, well, he could get through. And like, he felt obligated, and the team wanted him because he felt an obligation because they didn't have anyone else. And I'm like, at some point you have to have depth where you don't have to ask your pitchers to do that, or like, right, you know, and like, but so I will give Buehler and the team credit for this, because he was in that situation this year where he was trying to come back. He pitched a rehab game and he was going to be up against the clock, but like he might be a guy in October. Right. Like, but then he pitched the one rehab game and he just said like, it was too hard to like recover after the rehab, and they didn't want to rush it, right, because it could hurt things for next year. So they wisely pulled back and said, we're going to focus on coming back in 2024. It was nice to see that, like, in some way. Obviously it would have been great if Buehler's in the rotation or whatever, but like, that was not going to be realistic this year. So I think that was a wise move, and it's also going to be Buehler's walk year for free agency. Like, it's a very weird year. Now you obviously gonna have to expect some, you know, it's gonna be, who knows, it's not gonna be smooth, right? It's always coming back from injury. There's always like, there's rust, there's the command, there's a lot of things that go into it. But anyway, he's like, I listed him first, like, I don't think he's gonna be like opening day. I mean, he could be opening, who knows? I mean, well, look, that's what the offseason's for. I'm just saying right now, Bobby Miller is like the one clear holdover, right? Yep. Because he was so good. Ryan Papio, who again did not pitch in the NLDS, but like, he's the third guy. Emmett Sheehan's the fourth. You're noticing I'm listing, it's all rookies, and then Ryan Yarbrough, Gavin Stone, Kyle Hurt, those are guys on the 40 man. So like, I think that it makes it very clear what one of their major like focus is going to be, like, this offseason, is they have to get starting pitching, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, I think you're comfortable, like you said, Bobby Miller being a holdover. And yeah, then if you want that five man rotation, kind of penciling in a Pepio, Sheehan, you know, Stone slot in there. But that's, you're still, and then if you give Walker Buehler, you're still two names down.
right?
That you need to fill in. Ideally, you would maybe have all of the non-Miller rookies kind of be the sixth man on in the rotation,
right? Just and to that, have that's, that and that's kind of how they started this year, or at least in spring training, and then it just all went to hell, you know, like this. That said, like it's very impressive, like to have those, and again, assuming. Like Nick Frasso and Landon Knack get added. That is an absurd amount of like usable depth in that they're guys with options. It's like whoever you need, you can plug them in. That's some, and you know, potentially very good as well. We saw Ryan Pepio make the leap. He couldn't throw strikes last year. He was great at throwing strikes this year. Gavin Stone had the trouble this year, home runs, but also throwing strikes, command. Like, if he makes this, like, he doesn't have to make a similar leap to Pepio, but, like, he showed improvement in AAA, like, as the season went on. So, like, there's something to look forward to. Sheehan showed improvement this year. He was so good in September. So, like, yeah, there's a lot to like there, but you're right. Like, they got to get like two starters, I think, at least, right? Like, so
and if you're gonna, you can't play the sign a Noah Syndergaard, and that's one. You can make those deals. I like those deals. They frequently, not always, Noah Syndergaard work out for the Dodgers, but that's kind of like an upside play, and you need to really increase the floor of this rotation.
And I would argue like I included Ryan Yarbrough in this. But ideally, he's not in your rotation.
Right.
He's the occasional guy in your rotation. Like, he's the occasional start guy, but also, like, you know, fill in as you need guy. Like, so, yeah. But anyway, but the point is they're going to have room to spend, too. Like, even if they decide to cut back a little bit, like, payroll-wise. So there's six players under contract. There's 13 players eligible for arbitration. If we use the MLB trade rumors projections for those. Plus Muncy, that comes to 20 players for $136 million. Their competitive balance tax number is about $132.5 million. The CBT number this year is $237 million. So they got room to play, like, a little bit there. So that's going to be something. Now, I'll imagine now those 20 players include Gonsolin and May. So it's really 18 players, like, if you're roster building. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's all sorts of, like, ways to go about that. But yeah, it's they got room to do stuff, so we'll see. They got room to, you know, pay $50 million a year to say a two-way player is gonna be a one-way player in 2024. Who knows? But yeah, but that's where we're at the off season now, Jacob. I don't know if you knew that.
What's interesting is I love the baseball season. I don't love being here that quick. I do
it's a whiplash, to start it. It's always a whiplash.
And then there's always this period, and so, you know, when it's occurred has changed over the last few years, but where it's just a bunch of stuff happens, you're like, oh yeah, I love trades and all this is going, and then it's just dead forever. And you're just like, we're spring training, come on.
Yeah. It's also this weird part of the baseball offseason or baseball right now because the Dodgers were not competitive and the Braves lost in four games. Oh, by the way, all 300-win teams are lost. The 99-win Rays are out. Like,
The stat was something like the teams that won 91 or more won one playoff game.
Yeah. Yeah, the three teams left are 90, 90, 90, and 84 wins. And again, but all I would argue, you could definitely argue they're all, I think, better teams than that. Like, but like, and they're obviously playing well right now, too.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it's interesting. But also, the weird part of that is that these series have gone so quickly, six sweeps in eight series so far, that we're sitting here recording on a Friday. There's no baseball Saturday. There's baseball Sunday. So we've had two full major league off days between both rounds, which is brutal. So there's a lot of, like you said, like a lot. It's not the nothing of the off season, but it is like a. It's a weird lull in
and it's also I have a very hard time picking a team to root for here. It's the team that it's a divisional rival that knocked the Dodgers off. It's the Astros. It's the Phillies. Matt Stairs still haunts my dreams. It's the Rangers, and like, you know, I guess that kind of is like, well, that's nice. They have Corey Seager. We like Corey Seager, but they also might take Kershaw, and I can't.
Are, You sitting like Clayton Kershaw is sitting there, like presumably with ice on his shoulder at home, like watching the World Series and go, man, they just won the World Series. Like his phone's like buzzing, like they're FaceTiming him. Chris Young is FaceTiming him from the championship locker room. Oh, these are fun things to talk about and think about. But yeah, that's it. We're going to have we have not figured out our off-season record schedule. We will probably not have another episode till probably the end of the World Series, something like that. But we'll get back to you at some point. I guess if there's Dodgers news to talk about, if there's Dodgers news between now and then, it's not going to be good news. So like that's going to be a weird podcast. But that's it. This is the 3-Inning Save podcast. Thank you for listening all season. I'm Eric Steven. That's Jacob Burks. Thank you to Brian Salvatore for always making us sound the best we possibly can. And we will talk to you again in a few weeks.